Is the Bible just another religion? Well, today on Whisking the Writings, we're going to explore some of the reasons why Christianity actually stands out and has made such an impact on our world in many of the ways that we think and live our lives even today. Thanks for joining me on Whisking the Writings. This is a place for the skeptic, the seeker, the spiritually curious, those who believe, maybe just not like they used to, where you can explore the Bible, ask questions, and think deeply about what God's doing on this earth. My name's Joe Oliver, and for the past 25 years, I've been in pastoral ministry. I hold a master's degree in biblical theology, and if you've got questions, this is your place. Hi, everybody. On today's episode of Whiskey in the Writings, we're going to be exploring Christianity and how Christianity has actually impacted our lives today in ways that maybe you don't realize it. If you're spiritually curious, you're skeptic, you're de-churched or deconstructing, and you're wondering if Christianity is even worth pursuing, this video is going to be for you, because what I think when we look at the scope of the Christian influence on our world, we're actually going to be surprised to see that many of the things, the values, the ideas, and the concepts that we hold very dear today in many of our Western churches actually is from a Christian thought and point of view. And so we're going to look at some of those things today on this episode and really just talk about why Christianity is still a viable option for you even today. So I'm so glad that you're here, that you've joined us on this special edition episode, and I'll explain why here in a second. Let's get into the whiskey. All right, for our whiskey portion, we're doing something different today. This is not whiskey. This is coffee. It's the morning time here in Boise, where I'm at, and so I drink coffee. I love coffee. We have a special edition here. So if you remember when we did the tequila, but it was aged in bourbon, and so we did that tasting. We made that a feature, not bourbon, but aged, it connected to bourbon. This is the same thing. There's a friend of the channel, Whiskey and Writings, Dave. And Dave lives in Idaho, and he's a coffee roaster. And so Dave, I got to meet him recently, and it was super fun to chat with him about the channel. And he gave me, as a coffee roaster, a special edition of coffee that they had made. And this is a bourbon barrel coffee. A bourbon barrel coffee. It's a whole bean Ethiopian. I don't even know how to say that next word. It's a light roast. It's been aged 15 days in a bourbon barrel. And so they made this coffee here. I poured it out. I got to seal it so I keep the flavor. And I love coffee. I'm a coffee drinker every morning. I've been drinking coffee since I was a kid. So I love it. You can already smell just in these beans the bourbon influence, which is super rad. I have a cup here that I've poured. This is one of my favorite cups of all time. My cousin sent me this cup. I was born in Demopolis, Alabama. So my hometown, Demopolis, it was a place I spent many summers. It was the place that I actually became a Christian, was in Demopolis, visiting my grandma and my cousins there and aunt. And so Demopolis is a very special place in my heart. And my cousin sent me this coffee mug that features all the different places in Demopolis that are important to that city. And so I love this coffee mug. It's one of my favorites. So I'm drinking out of my favorite coffee mug with some bourbon aged coffee beans. Here we go. Yes, already. I mean, you can just smell the bourbon influence, I like the light roast. I'm not a dark roast coffee drinker. It's sitting on my tongue. It's got a lot of flavor. This is really good, Dave. And again, I love that smell of the bourbon. Dave, thank you. This is really good. And so we're featuring this today on the channel. And shout out to Dave, the roaster friend of the channel. We're so appreciative that for this and being able to try it here on this episode of Whiskey and the Writings. Let's dive in. All right, folks, like we said at the beginning, we're going to dive into a thought process about the Christian faith and what makes it significant and stand out in and amongst many different options that you may have out there. And again, this isn't to disparage any other world religion or religious thought. It's just simply to hone in on Christianity and ask questions about why would this matter? Why is this worth investigating and trusting? And I want to start out with clearly Jesus. So as we explore like what makes Christianity significant and even different to some degree is the person of Jesus. What Jesus said, what he did, what he taught. I want to point us to a story in the Gospel of Luke that I think encapsulates one of the primary ethics of Jesus and his kingdom and what he expects of his followers, people of his kingdom, people who submit to Jesus as being the way forward to model their lives. Jesus makes it very clear what he expects from us. And there's one particular story in the Gospel of Luke, the biography of Luke, where this is famously in Matthew's biography. You have what's called the Sermon on the Mount. There's three chapters in 5, 6, and 7 of the Matthew biography and Luke's biography. He does have this sermon, but it's a condensed version of it. Luke doesn't go into all the detail that Matthew does in telling the story. It's very interesting in this story how Luke chooses to arrange the information. It's very different than Matthew, and that's okay, because Luke has a different point that he's trying to make. He's trying to share what Jesus taught, his primary teachings. There have been other videos where I've talked about the Sermon on the Mount, and when I think of the Sermon on the Mount, it's mainly the core teachings of Jesus as he went around from place to place and preached. And so we need to understand that Jesus was a traveling teacher. And what he would do is he would go from place, he would teach, he would go to another place, he'd teach. Oftentimes he'd start in the synagogue and then he'd go out into the city, he'd perform miracles, he would do all these things. And so these stories of Jesus going around and the teachings that you hear, for instance, like in Luke chapter 6 and in Matthew chapter 5, what you're getting here is a snapshot of most likely what he had taught when he'd go around from place to place to place. And so those that were hearing this message would have been inundated with these thoughts and these ideas. If you've ever read like long discourse of Jesus, and if you're like me, I begin to question like, how did we get those direct quotes? Like that's a lot to write down. And so with someone sitting down, like going writing down as he's talking, The Chosen, which is a TV series about the life of Jesus, has a character, Matthew, in it. And he's depicted as kind of like writing things down as events took place. Maybe that happened. It's plausible. I don't think it's very likely, but it is plausible. But how did we get these things? I think it's more likely that we get these long discourses because they had heard it hundreds of times. And then when they were traveling from location to location, you know, they weren't taking flights where it was hours to get places. They were walking by foot to get places. And so days would go by where they're probably dialoguing about the thing that they just heard. And so what I think what we get in the biographies here, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, when you get long discourse of quotations of Jesus, sayings of Jesus, what you're getting is things that have been just ingrained in their hearts and minds. It became unforgettable. There's even some scholarly work being done that says that what we have in the sayings of Jesus can actually be more like sound bites that would have been repetition ways for memorization. The teachings that you have in the biographies are actually arranged in such a way that if you're reading them in Greek or Aramaic, it would have sounded in such a way to help you memorize. So there's lots of thoughts about that. That's not this video. What we're talking about is I want to highlight a story in the gospel, the biography of Luke, where Jesus is teaching. This is during his sermon discourse. He says something that I think, my opinion, actually stands out as one of the definitive features of the message of Jesus. And this is what he says in Luke chapter 6, verse 27. But I say to you who are listening, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. To the person who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other as well. And from the person who takes away your coat, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks you, and do not ask for your possessions back from that person who takes them away. Treat others in the same way that you would want them to treat you. I would argue that if you asked any random person, what did Jesus teach? 9 times out of 10, you would get a variation of what I just read to you. This teaching that Jesus said to love your enemies, to bless those who persecute you, to treat others like you would like to be treated, the golden rule, some might say, this belief system that the other person that is your enemy, that you have othered, is someone that actually deserves your value and respect, in the sense that you have an ability to see beyond the fault. You have an ability to see beyond the difference. You have an ability to see beyond the situation caused a separation, and actually pray for them and actually bless them. And actually treat them in a way that you would want to be treated. This is such a primary core ethic of the way of Jesus. And here's the difference in Christianity. Christians don't treat others well simply because they want to. We would hope that they want to. We would hope that that becomes the motivation of your heart, that you want to do it. But the difference in Christianity is that you don't get a choice. If you are a follower of Jesus right now and you're listening to this, you don't have a choice. The kingdom of God, the kingdom ethic, the primary teaching of Jesus was an ethic of not othering other people. And when I say othering other people, what I mean is this. One of the ways in which atrocities happen in our world is when we other someone else. We make them other than us. And when we other people, we draw lines. And those lines keep us from them. Jesus isn't talking about difference here, that we don't have difference. He clearly says your enemy. He doesn't say make them not your enemy. I mean, there's an element of there are differences in the world, but what he is getting at is how you treat them as this other matters. How you treat them matters. He goes on to say in verse 32, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? And if you lend to those whom you hope to be repaid, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners so that they may be repaid in full. Verse 35, but love your enemies, and do good, and lend expecting nothing back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be the sons of the Most High, because he is kind to ungrateful and evil people. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. This section here is such an important piece of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. You don't have a choice. Right? So it's he talks about doing good, right? He says at the beginning, he says, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you, do good to those who hate you. That's in verse 27. At the end here, he says 35, but love your enemies and do good, do good. So twice here, he at the beginning, do good, at the end, do good. And anyone can do good, right? Like, there are great people out there that are not followers of Jesus. There are people that do good all the time that don't even look in the way of Jesus. And that's good that they do that. But here's the difference in Christianity. People that do good, that don't know Jesus or care about Jesus or care about Christianity. They do good because they have their own will to do so. They are making their own decision to do good. Christians don't have a choice. So when you see Christians acting in a way that is not good towards other people, they are not acting in the way of Christ. They're not acting in the way of Christ. Jesus said, love your enemy, bless those who persecute you, do good to those around you, treat people like you would want to be treated. This is the core primary ethic of Jesus. And that ethic, and the reason why I'm going into detail about this is because it sets the stage for why Christianity has mattered through the centuries, because people took this seriously. People in the world took this seriously. And I want to explore with you some of those ways that Christians have expressed this going forward. And we're going to look at that in the I'm Just Saying. That's coming up right now. Okay, for this portion of I'm Just Saying, I want to look at a few moments in history, in Christian history, that I think are definitive of what we were just talking about, doing good to others and how that impacted the rest of the world. And so the first person I want to look at is a guy named Basil of Caesarea. Basil of Caesarea. He was a leader in the church in the 300s, and particularly around the years 365, Basil did something that was unknown in the world at that time, as far as we know it. As far as we know it, this was unknown. Basil Caesarea took so literally the teachings of Jesus, he created something out of nothing in the way of Jesus. And today, every single one of you watching this video has benefited from Basil Caesarea, and you don't even know it. So what did he do? Well, Basil of Caesarea lived in a time where the health system in the Roman Empire was non-existent. There were not hospitals like we think of hospitals in the ancient world. When, you know, we have here St. Alphonsus, we have a St. Luke's, and or even urgent care. And if I were to go, if I were to break an arm, if I were to have a sickness, I could go to that hospital and they would care for me. It's a open to the public. Yeah, you got to pay for it, all these things. That was an idea that did not exist in the ancient world. Were there healthcare and places where people could get healing in the ancient world? Yes, but here's the difference. The Roman armies had a system to care for soldiers that got injured. And that was to the benefit of the Roman Empire, because you don't, you know, you have a soldier that gets a cut or gets a wound, a shot. Caring for them benefits your army because you can get them back into the battle or whatever. And so the Roman authorities had systems, hospitals, areas where soldiers could actually get help. But that was not a public offering. A random person couldn't walk off the street and get the benefit of that medical support. The rich and the elite had doctors that could come to them. They would hire medical doctors to come to them into their home, and they had the means to do that. But again, that wasn't a public offering that just anybody off the street that had a cough or a cold could walk into and get support and healing. And so the common place where people would go for healing was different oracles or different pagan rituals to hopefully ward off. You have stories of people that would lay next to pools that they believed had healing properties just to get healed of whatever they had. And those things existed for the public, but nothing that was organized to actually support the broad population until Basil of Caesarea. Basil of Caesarea, in the years of the 360 AD, created houses that were specifically meant to care for the sick and the needy and the destitute. And what made this unique in human history was that these houses had full-time residents living in it, nurses living in it, that were there 24/7 to care for people. And it wasn't just like a hospital to mend a broken arm. It was more than that. This was a place where elderly, so it acted as a hospice, the elderly could go and get full-time care. This was a place where women could go and get care, where babies could go and get care. It was a poorhouse as well, where those who were destitute financially can go and find a bed to sleep in. This concept of these houses, that Basil created, was a new concept at that time in that world and in where they were at. And it actually revolutionized the way that we actually work for healthcare in our world today. Now, why did Basil do that? Why would someone be compelled to actually care for people in this way? And it comes from the ethic of Jesus. The hospitals were a theological invention, meaning this, that the reason why Basil went to the effort to create these houses and these homes is because he believed that it was a theological problem to solve. And here's why. In places like Matthew chapter 25, you have an analogy that Jesus gives about what it looks like to care and how God views those that are in this world that we are put in charge to care for. And he says this, "For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me." Verse 37, "Then the righteous will say, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger, invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" Verse 40, "And the king will answer them, I tell you the truth, just as you did it for one of the least of these brothers or sisters of mine, you did it for me." This is a theological point of view, meaning this, Jesus takes very seriously how we treat and care for others. And so for Basil of Caesarea, he took those words literally and enacted upon them and created a system of healthcare that we benefit from today. So every time you go to a hospital for care, you should be thanking Basil of Caesarea and his belief that Jesus meant what he said, that we need to care for people. That came directly from Jesus. Okay, so the next area that I think Christianity made a significant impact was in regard to a Roman law. Have you ever heard of the Roman law exposure? If you hadn't, that's okay. Many people haven't. But what the Roman law of exposure was, a law that permitted a citizen to discard a baby that was unwanted, i.e. a female child or a disfigured child. There was a Roman law that actually permitted a citizen to take that newborn and set it outside the house and let it die of the elements. And then when the trash would be picked up off the street, this baby, dead baby would be picked up with it. Now, for us, we go, that is grotesque. That is barbaric. But there was actually a Roman law permitting it at the time of early Christianity and the origins of Christianity, as it began to grow in the first, second, and third century. These were the practices that were happening around them. And in fact, we actually have in antiquity a letter written by a Roman soldier who is off at war, and he's writing back to his wife, giving her instructions and catching up and writing a very loving letter back to her. His name, the Roman soldier, is Hilarion. And so what he does is he writes this letter and he's saying in the letter, "Hey, I miss you. We're here at war. We're on the battlefield and I'm looking forward to come home soon. Hopefully I'll be able to get home soon." He says, "I'm going to send you my paycheck," because Roman soldiers got paid for their work. He says, "I'm going to send you my paycheck so that you have that money." And he's aware that his wife is about to give birth. And he says in the letter, "If it's a boy, keep it. If it's a girl, expose it. Get rid of it." And what he's talking about is this real law and belief that a female child was less valuable than a male child. And he's saying just disregard it. So why is that important? And you can Google it, you can look it up. It's a widely known thing in scholarship, but that letter. But why is that important? Well, what had happened was that as Christianity began to take off, Christians began to, when they would see a child exposed, set aside, they would take up that child and care for it. They would adopt the child. So Christians were, there was a reputation going around that Christians were the ones that were actually going in and adopting these child, these children. Now, why would Christians do that? Why would Christians think it necessary to see that baby and rescue it? We take it for granted today that of course they should. That's the way it should be. But if that's your point of view, which it should be, you would have been a minority in the early centuries of Christianity, because the wide population of Greco-Roman thought would have thought it normal to do that. It were the Christians that said, that's not right. And the reason for that is because they had an ethic of Jesus that life matters, that other people matter, that these children, these babies matter. And so they took it upon themselves, because they took Jesus seriously, to answer that problem. What a beautiful story of the impact. So for us today, like with Basil of Caesarea in hospitals and these Christians who would pick up children that have been exposed, these ethics of human life, humans matter, that we should care for people in need are directly correlated. The things that we value today in Western civilization is values that even non-religious people go, yeah, we should do that. That's an important thing, is a Christian idea. It is a Jesus ethic. And I love the work that Tom Holland, he's a scholar, not the actor, did a work. He wrote a book called Dominion. I have it right up here. All right, I'll put it back. Okay, so this is a work, it's called Dominion, and it's a pretty beefy work. It's by Tom Holland, and in it, what he does is he makes the argument. He says this is how the Christian Revolution remade the world. And I love this book because it highlights the feature that what we value in Western civilization today came on the back of Christian ethics and ideas. What we believe today, what we see today, is these values that we fight for, whether it's, you know, healthcare for people, whether it's human life, whether it's how we see other people and interact with them, come from a Christian ethic. When people who submit to Jesus take him seriously, it changes the world. This is why I think Christianity matters. This is why I think we should take Christianity seriously. And so when we're reflecting on, you know, what role does Christianity have and why should it be taken seriously, I think it's because what we can see is that there's a trajectory. Yes, that trajectory can get off course for sure. And we've talked about church hurt on videos in the past. We've talked about when Christians get it wrong. But for the most part, when Christians take Jesus seriously, it changes people around them. And it's directly from these teachings and ethics that we get from these biographies about Jesus. And so if you're going to try to take Jesus seriously, you need to spend time in the biographies of Jesus, read them, study them, memorize them, because it will lead you, if you follow them, to not only make yourself better, but it'll also make the world around you better. And that's my I'm just saying. All right, everybody, I want to just get right into commenting on your comments. I appreciate you staying with me for this video. I love this segment. In fact, I had someone comment on one of the videos, commented basically that I could watch your comments on the comments all day. And the reason why I do this segment is because I get a lot of comments. A lot of them aren't very kind. And that's okay. But I want to highlight the, you know what? This is part of discourse. This is part of conversation, right? Not everybody's going to like what I have to say. Not everybody's going to believe what I believe. Not everybody's going to agree with what the ideas that I'm throwing out there. Here's the thing about this whole conversation. You know, there are people that are, you know, upset that I'm drinking whiskey and talking about the Bible or whatever. Think I'm leading people to hell. All those things, right? You're okay. Have those thoughts, those opinions. I'm not for everyone. And I know that. I'm not saying that everything that I say on this channel is absolutely perfect. In fact, I'll probably get a lot wrong, and that's okay. A lot of people are trying to challenge me that I got some things wrong, and that's okay too. And so part of doing this comments on your comments is just to highlight the sometimes the absurdity of the web and putting thoughts out into the web and how much, you know, visceral kind of reaction people have to just things that I'm saying. And that's just the world we live in today, and that's okay. So we're going to feature some comments. Sometimes I feature some good ones. I appreciate you out there that are commenting and saying some very kind things. But today I'm going to highlight a couple that were a bit upset at some things that I said. So the first one we're going to look at, this is Joshua Cooley 1417 or 1417. Joshua Cooley 1417. This was a video that he comments on a video that I made where it's, I believe in God, but I don't trust the church. I gotta say, this video kind of went viral, like in a small V, lowercase v way. It got the most views. It got a ton of subscribers to the channel. I mean, it was almost shocking, like thousands of people watching this video. It's by far the most watched video I have. I have a lot of shorts that get a lot of views, but as a long form video, this one has got the most. And boy, it was a lot of people were upset. And I think what a lot of people were upset about is that they were thinking that I'm saying that you don't need the community of God's people, or what we want to call the church. So the argument is like, people maybe saw the opening clip but didn't watch the whole video. And if you're watching this, I just want to encourage you, watch the whole video. If you're going to make a comment, watch the whole video, right? Like, quote a timestamp in the video where I say something to show that you're actually watching it. Don't just look at a header. Don't just look at the, you know, first minute where I'm actually trying to, you know, be provocative in my statements. Watch the video, because you'll see in the video that I recommend churches. You see in the video I recommend communities where you can grow in discipleship. So clearly I'm not saying you don't need other people. But this person, and I don't know, Joshua, if you actually watched the video in its entirety or not, but you said this, in objective principle, leaving the church is leaving God. According to the Bible, the church is Jesus Christ, Ephesians 1, 23. The church is the fullness of Jesus Christ. All that he is present in the church. To leave it is to reject him. However, the subjective reality needs to be considered as well. First, it is entirely possible that your church is not the church. So you'd have to be clear about what church you are leaving behind. I appreciate this statement because, again, I think it highlights this fallacy that I'm talking about God's people. So the word church there in the Koine Greek just means a fellowship of people, a calling out of people. So it's a group of people that move into a space where they are unified in their worship of Jesus and devotion to Jesus. And so when I talk about the church, I'm not necessarily talking about collecting of people in God's name. I'm talking about these local chapters of churches that simply cause hurt and pain. And you don't have to be married to that. You can leave that. You have permission to leave that if it's not a healthy place. I would argue and hope that you make every effort to leave with peace and that you give the leader of that church an opportunity to dialogue with you as long as it's safe to do so. But what I'm talking about here is not the, like, you can go it alone. I'm talking about you need people around you, and that is the church, other people that you move forward with in community. That is an important part of the Christian walk, is community. And so I don't believe you can do it alone. I do believe that Jesus never leaves you. I do believe that if you are in Christ, he is in you. And I also then step two is that you move into a community of others that can help you grow and mature in that walk with Jesus. So that's my point. Thanks, Joshua, for your comment. And I kind of agree with you. So there's that. Then there was another comment on a short that I did off of that video. So little behind the scenes here, when I make a video, then I chop it into some shorts that I distribute throughout the rest of the week on Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. And so they're like little clips of my video, and then I link to the video to see more. Well, sometimes people just see the shorts and they comment on the shorts, and this guy did. This guy, his handle is at T-Sharp. T-Sharp. Man, you and I had a little back and forth in our comments. I'm not going to read all of it, but I do want to respond to your opening statement. So you said this. This ideology is dangerously close to Jesus was just a good guy. A position devoid of historical understanding or desire for truth. No, the Bible is true and must be affirmed and supported as such with the evidence we have. To brush that off is to kill the faith. It isn't just some hopey-dopey idea of wisdom that brings us to the text. It has wisdom, yes, but we need to read it for the truth. And, you know, here's the thing, T-Sharp, you want to challenge me here, but you actually didn't watch the video. So go back and watch the video. Do your homework before you start talking. That's my directness to you, man. I never once said it wasn't true. I actually do believe it's true. I often also think that the way people read it may not be true. And so I am interested in exploring the wisdom that it has. I can argue about how we got the text. I can argue about how we got Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the reliability of the text, the manuscript evidence supporting the text. We can look at the Koine Greek if you want. We can look at the Hebrew if you want. But that's not the point of this channel. I do believe the Bible's true, and I do support what it says. I probably don't support what you think it says, though. That's okay. That's our difference. I'm not afraid of the conversation about that. I think you collude two different things in your statement. I think Jesus was a good guy. I think he was more than a good guy. And I think his more than a good guy as the Son of God is why Christianity endures today. If Jesus was just a good guy, some random dude that we have some teachings about, we would not even have a Bible. Do you understand that? Like, the fact that Jesus was who he said he was and that he resurrected is why these texts have been preserved in the way that they've been preserved. It's because Jesus was more than just a good guy. My point in this, though, is that what we see in the teachings of Jesus offer us wisdom in how we actually activate our faith today. I talked about in the video today, Basil of Caesarea, his actions in creating hospitals are directly correlated to the wisdom that he gained from the teaching of Jesus that activated his faith to do something about it. And the wisdom that he had was that he created something that Jesus never explicitly said he needed to create. Nowhere do the biographies of Jesus say that Jesus then turned and said, hey, one day, Basil of Caesarea, if you're reading this, I want you to create a house where you care for, you create a hospice, a poorhouse, and a hospital all in one, and I want you to have live-in nurses that stay there 24/7 to care for people. He doesn't say that. What he does say is you should care for the sick. And when you do care for the sick, you're actually caring for me. And Basil used that as the wisdom to create hospitals. Do you understand the logic? So first off, I'm not here to debate online, and you guys can go back and look because you can kind of see me fired up right now, and that's okay. But T-Sharp, I think you're missing the point here. And when you make statements like, if you can't accept correction or engage with disagreement, you're in the wrong field. I'm happy to hear different points of views, but you also need to be ready that when you say you try to correct me, that I may not actually care what you think. I'm here just sharing what God is doing in my heart, and I'm sharing it through Whiskey and the Writings, and today I'm sharing it through Coffee and the Writings and Bourbon Barrels, and I want to thank you for watching and engaging with us, and I will share more commenting on your comments here in the future. So thank you for joining me today on this episode of Whiskey and the Writings. We'll catch you next time, and good morning, and cheers.